Ben Starr and Kevin O'Donohue here with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we have a very interesting guest, one that certainly struck our curiosity, and we wanted to get him here in the studio and introduce him to you. His name is Clay Cockrell. He's a licensed social worker here in New York City. Clay, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. So I'll tell our friends and our Positive Mind family a little bit about Clay. Clay is a social worker, but not your average therapist, really. Clay has been doing a very unique and very different kind of work that caught our attention. You may have seen him featured on CNN, in the New York Times, and a variety of other media sources. Clay is doing what we call walk and talk therapy. So that means that you meet your clients outside here in Manhattan, and then you take a walk with them through Central Park.
That's right.
And you do a standard session, 50 mm-hmm. minutes, 45, an hour.
50 minutes, yeah.
Okay. And you do the standard session in motion through Central Park.
Yeah.
And you do a round trip, get right back to Columbus Circle.
Uh-huh.
And you've been doing this for how long?
About 15 years now.
15 years. So we're going to hear a little bit about walk and talk therapy from Clay, who is really our neighbor
right around the corner from the Positive Mind Center.
So Clay, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
I'm thinking of taking mine outside. I'll go to the opposite side of the park so we don't compete with each other. But I mean, this sounds fascinating to me. Fascinating. How did you get a client interested in this?
Well, I like to say that all good things come from my wife. I had a client, and
Do you do couples therapy?
Yes, I do, actually.
Okay. Anyway,
but not walking.
Yeah,
it gets too complicated, people walking
right
through the park. So I had a client that was a Wall Street guy, and he had the hardest time coming up to my office, getting off work, the commute, what have you. And he would miss sessions, and if he did come to session, he was so frazzled from the commute.
Yeah.
And I would talk about, you know, I don't give information, but I would talk about it at home. I got this guy that's really having a hard time coming to me, and she said, why don't you just go to him? Mm-hmm. And being the typical mansplaining, I said, oh, honey.
I went to school for this. What do you mean?
Exactly.
I have to go to him?
Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, honey, then it doesn't work that way. You can't. And she said, why? And I couldn't really explain why I couldn't. Mm. I mean, I couldn't punch holes in it. So I started thinking about it. There's really no reason why I couldn't have a session near his office. There's Battery Park. And I said, why don't you? And I offered it up to him. And he said, great, yeah, that'd be very helpful. Mm. It's a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. We meet at Battery Park. We have the session. Now, I've been working with him for 6-8 months, right?
Okay.
And he was really stuck, having a hard time with several different aspects of his life and not making any kind of movement.
Mm-hmm.
Ended the session, he felt great. I felt
great.
First session. The second session, he comes back, and he had made some significant changes in his life in just the previous week. And the third session, he made even more changes, and he was feeling better, and you could just see that he looked better,
mm-hmm.
and he said, "I love this. We should do this more often." So I started offering it to other clients, and I certainly liked it because it got me out of my office.
Wonderful.
And you know, a walk and talk was born.
Wonderful, wonderful. How do you keep track of? I would think, like, how do you keep track of what they're saying when you're walking?
Well, I guess I love story, and I think everybody has a story that they have, and so I'm just incredibly curious, and so it's just like every week I'm picking up where we left off in the novel of this person's life, so I've got a good memory.
Uh-huh. And you don't need to take notes. I mean, do you, at the end of a session, remind yourself, so next week I want to ask him about or pick up this theme?
Right. I'll make a couple of notes on my phone. Like, you know, I gave this homework. I want him to, you know, ask about this one thing and see if he makes any progress. But just a couple of notes, not anything big.
So, Clay, having worked in Manhattan for 15 years or 20 years?
About 20 years, yeah.
Okay. It seems, from what I understand about your practice, that you become very in tune to specific issues and challenges for people living in an urban setting.
Right.
What are a few examples of issues that you find are really hard for city people?
A lot of anxiety and a lot of isolation. And we've gotten so used to it, just the noise of the train and the traffic and the sirens, and it's a constant bombardment, I think, and we've gotten used to it, but it still has an impact. So I think there's a low-level anxiety that sometimes bubbles up.
It's the great irony of New York, isn't it, that we're in a city of 8 million people, and so many people have this anxiousness and loneliness.
Absolutely.
Going on.
Absolutely. It's always there. And certainly a lot of stress. A lot of people are struggling in their jobs. But then there is this isolation that we don't have connection in a city with, you know, so many people.
It's a great point.
Yeah. I want to hear, it's a terrific point. It's getting flooded with ideas. I'm thinking this would be terrific kind of therapy with an addict. You know, because, I mean, a person who's struggling with addiction would have a hard time sitting in an enclosed office.
Absolutely.
And being out in the open mm-hmm. might enable them to free up the emotions and the fears, the anxieties, the struggles mm-hmm. that they wouldn't feel so comfortable. Because let's face it, a lot of the time they're doing their drugs inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so maybe being exposed to therapy in that way is just reigniting the same scenario that they are when they're taking their drugs.
Absolutely.
And I think going out for a walk would be a great cohort to be dealing with these addicts. I'm also thinking about shut-ins.
Yes.
But we'll get to that in a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. But it also, it normalizes them. I'm out here with everybody else. Look at everybody out here with me, and I can be normal. Addicts definitely feel very closed in, ashamed, but to treat them just as normal human beings, that we're moving forward here, we're putting one foot in front of the other, can be very helpful.
And I think the presence of another person as you're struggling with addiction and it being a normal, we're just going for a walk. Mm-hmm. You remember how to do this. You did this when you were not an addict.
Right.
Now you're doing it with a person. Mm-hmm. It's normalizing that. It's reminding them of a world that, you know, they're being shut out of.
Absolutely.
So I see a lot of potential for this. I'm so curious about your success stories. I want to hear about these successes. But tell me more about this Wall Street guy. Because you say you noticed a change pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he had been struggling. He was stuck for a long, long time.
Yeah.
What opened up for him?
Well, he was struggling with his boss and really not confronting him. On some inappropriate stuff that was going on at work, and he wasn't getting the promotion that he needed.
Mm-hmm.
But he began to really grow his confidence and begin to think outside the box of how he could approach this issue in a different way. And after that first session, he came back and he said, you know, I had a talk with my boss. I mean, he didn't talk about everything, but the fact that he had a talk and expressed, so it, mm-hmm. it began a conversation with them.
Right.
So he began to make some small changes, but those changes had not been on the table for a good 6-8 months. He had really just been stuck, and he would come and complain,
right.
but never do anything.
Right. Nothing like success stories that we therapists so often need, and it's great when we get them in the first session.
Yeah.
You see a change automatically. So tell me about homework. You give homework.
I give homework. I think a lot of therapy is cathartic. You just come and you complain or you talk about your issue.
Yes.
And there's benefit to put a vocabulary and to tell another human being your emotions, your feelings, your problems.
Yeah.
But then what are you going to do about it? So I give you assignments. I want you maybe to listen to a podcast or to read an article, or I want you to do a writing exercise or that person that you're afraid to call, you know, write them a letter. Maybe you won't send it, but begin making some movement. Because if we just continue to sit in the problem and not do anything about it, I don't feel like I'm adding value to that client's life.
And it probably might not seem as oppressive to be given a homework assignment when you're walking, you know, or like you're outdoors or, you know, but if you're in an office and you're saying, I want you to face this and confront this, and here's your homework assignment, it's almost like a teacher-student scenario, and you don't really want that barrier.
Right, right.
So if you've, you know, had a 45-minute walking, we have to call this therapy something. I mean, pedagogy used to mean walking, learning, Plato, pedagogic.
Mm-hmm.
We have to figure out a word for therapy. Walking in therapy, but we'll come up with that later.
Mobile counseling.
I like that. So what about walking as a metaphor for moving on? Moving on with life's problems, moving forward with your challenges.
Yeah. Mm. I think better on my feet. And I think a lot of people do. And it is a metaphor for moving forward. And I get so much information from a walking session that I don't get from an indoor session. I get your posture. your gait. I get to build a rapport with you on the rhythm of your steps.
And how you relate to the outside world.
Absolutely.
That's something you'd never see in an office.
Right. Right.
But it also, you know, it seems to me we're moving so much, even at our desks, you know, the internet, you know, the cell phone. It's a lot of movement. Mm-hmm. And so we're living in a world where, you know, even though you're staying alone and you're at a desk, you are moving a lot. But to be taking therapy outdoors, it seems like we're, you know, it's our natural environment to be moving, as it were, mm-hmm. As we're doing in our work life.
Yeah.
So this kind of therapy seems to make a lot of sense. It also disarms people, I think.
Absolutely.
You're not staring at them. You're walking ahead.
I was struck that this is, men love this. And I think a lot of men don't go to therapy, but I have a majority, not a majority, maybe 75% of my practice is with men because it is not as threatening to sit and us guys, we're not great with eye contact and talking about our feelings, but you're walking through the park, it normalizes. Mm-hmm. It's not going to see the doctor. And the eye contact is not nearly as severe. I mean, we'll glance side to side and make a point, but you're looking forward. And it is less threatening, I think.
Yeah. Successes. Yeah. Have you had befores and afters? Like, have you had clients that you had in your office and did office therapy for a while, and then all of a sudden they said, hey, I want to try this walking therapy with you. Mm-hmm. And did you notice any changes? Have you had clients like that?
I did at the beginning because I had a normal face-to-face practice, pretty small.
Sure.
And then as I saw the effectiveness of this new technique, I began offering it to them. And some of them came on board, most of them came on board because they thought, hey, this is cool and different. And so I was able to see the change in them. But now people come to me specifically for walking. So I generally, all of my clients begin as walkers.
Okay. All referrals? Is that it? I mean, do you have a website? I mean, how do they find the walking therapist?
Well, I'm on Google, and I've got it's walkandtalk.com. So, okay. You know, once they find that, they kind of put two and two together, and the website kind of explains what it is.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Clay Cockrell. He does walk and talk therapy, something that really piqued our curiosity. So we wanted to have him here on The Positive Mind and hear a little bit about this interesting modality. Certainly, I think, very appropriate for New York City and specifically Manhattan, a very walking-centric area. Mm-hmm. People walk everywhere. I mean, this is walker's paradise, as they say. So,
or not, because I've got friends who just came into town this weekend, and they are exhausted.
Sure.
Because they said, you people walk everywhere.
Yeah.
and we've gotten, you know, used to it. Certainly me, I'm walking, you know, 6-7 hours a day.
Right.
But if you're not used to it, people coming in from the Midwest and Europe and whatever, they're going, oh my goodness, we're walking everywhere.
I don't even notice that, really, right? Going up and down the subway stairs, walking 3 blocks, going different places.
Yeah.
I want to do bicycle therapy. I want to be the bicycle therapist.
Okay.
We each have headphones, and we're, you know, because New York has become a bicycle city, and we're working on that. Anyway, idea for the future.
Okay. For people listening at home, what can they do? What can they implement in their life? Is walking, how can walking affect our mental health? I mean, is it enough to just walk with a friend, with a loved one, with a family member? Mm-hmm. Not everyone's going to be able to make it into see any walk and talk therapist, whether it's you or someone else.
Yeah.
So how can we leave people with a tool that they can use? How can people implement this into their lives?
Well, I think it's important to understand that for the last 5 to 10 years, the research is very clear that any kind of exercise, either mild or strenuous, is going to improve your mental health. So if you just move your body a little bit, you're going to feel better. Mm. To get outside, you're going to feel better. You're going to have a different perspective. You're going to have fresh air. So I encourage people that if you've got a family member or a coworker and maybe a lunch hour, because I've got friends that will and grab one of those wraps, like a sandwich wrap, and at lunch, they're just going to walk around the block and see the neighborhood and breathe a little deeper, have some fresh air. I'm not talking about you go out and get sweaty, but just go out and stroll and talk about what's going on, because I think that we lack a connection in the city. And too many people will go to a bar, and that's the fun thing to do after work or what have you. But, you know, the alcohol is there, the music is loud, you're not really able to talk.
It's not really conducive at all.
It's not. For friendship, to go out and just, how are you doing? what's been going on with your marriage and your career? And let's go talk about, and then, you know, I'm going to listen to you for a little while, and then we're going to switch, and I want you to listen to me.
Exactly.
And that intimacy and that connection is created. But I think walking is really helpful for that.
You know, it reminds me, at an old job I used to work in Midtown, I was right on the corner of, it was Madison Avenue and 38th Street. And I had this one coworker that I was friendly with in the uh-huh. whole company. I didn't have too many friends in this company. It was a challenging place for me. But this guy and I, we would take walks around the block.
Yeah.
You know, a couple times a week. We'd meet at a certain time, take the elevator down together, walk avenue to avenue,
yeah.
and back up and around the block. And when I think back on that job,
mm-hmm.
those are my best memories from working there.
Absolutely.
I mean, those were at a critical time in my life, too. There was a lot going on. And this person I was able to sound off with him,
yeah.
and vice versa.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a great idea. It's very useful.
And the bar can often be like an illusion of friendship mm-hmm. and intimacy. How can you be intimate in a bar with the TVs going and
right.
the noise and the windows open and the doors open? How can this be? No, when you go out for a walk with somebody,
mm-hmm.
one-on-one, you can't avoid but be intimate.
Absolutely. But we're filled with so much distraction. Our phones.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The phones.
Do you have a policy about the phone and during session?
Yeah. We got to turn our phones off.
Turn them off, right?
Turn them off, yeah.
I like
absolutely.
That. I approve.
You approve?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But the televisions and the music and everything is distracting us from getting real, I think, yeah. with our friends, with our family. And I work with a lot of executives, and the idea now is to go to maybe your higher ups or maybe somebody in a different department and just go, you know, can I buy you coffee or can I just kind of pick your brain for a little while about where my career wants to go or where I think the department needs to go. And to then add in, look, I've got this thing where I go out at lunch and I go walk around the area. Why don't you and me just go do that together and, you know, get a bottle of water and just mm-hmm. talk. I want to pick your brain on some mm-hmm. things. So that can be really helpful in connecting other people in your workplace.
So, you know, when you go to therapy, you're really paying for the therapist. You know, you could do this with your friends, but really with a therapist, you're going to go into different conversations that you might not go into with your friends. I mean,
sure.
that's why you want to see a therapist.
Mm-hmm. It's all about you.
Well, it's about the client, but, you know, the client is invested in your professionalism
right.
and your access to emotions that, you know, your friends just might miss.
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
about emotions? I mean, how do you deal with emotions as you're walking with people?
Yeah. I think that I convey a sense of trust. That this is a safe place.
Great.
I'm going to
yeah.
be there with you no matter what happens. And I let them know from the very beginning that emotions happen. That's just normal. That's part of life.
Mm-hmm.
And when they happen, we experience them, whether it's anger or tears. There have been times where we've talked about some very difficult, intimate things, and the tears come, and I'm in the middle of Central Park, and we just pull off to the side
mm.
and pick a park bench and let it happen. And it's kind of a lesson that, you know, it's not something to be embarrassed about. And plus, too, you know, it's New York. Nobody's paying any attention.
Right.
But,
and there's nothing like having an emotion outside.
Yeah.
You know, you can have it in your bedroom, in your office, other
right.
places. But to have it outside is, mm-hmm. you know, a real plus.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So say more. So
the emotion comes, and, you know, I sit there with them, and then we get back up and we keep walking. And that's what you've got to do in day-to-day life. When we fight against our emotions, when we're embarrassed of them and we don't want, maybe they're ugly and uncomfortable, they bottle up.
Yeah, we just did a show about that recently, talking about releasing emotions. And we had Dr. Brenda Shoshana on,
mm.
and she told us something that really stuck with me, which is that you are senior to your anger, you are senior to your emotions, and they don't have to run your life.
Right.
You know, it's okay to feel them. It's okay to let them pass through.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to acknowledge them.
Yeah.
But they don't have to exert power over you.
Exactly.
It's the opposite. You're the boss of them.
You're the boss. And it's nothing to be ashamed of or embarrassed. It's natural. It's human. That is the human experience, is that we have these emotions.
I like that you pick up and you go carry on. The
yep.
session continues. We're
mm-hmm.
moving. We're
mm-hmm.
going on. That. You know, you can have these emotions in your life. You don't have to wait till next week to see me for a therapy session. You can have an emotion this week and notice you can survive it. You can pick yourself up. You can go forward.
Yeah.
So this talking therapy, walking therapy seems like so, you know, synergistic with the sense that I can do this myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I talk to people that so many times we shut down our emotions. We don't check in with our emotions. We just go from thing to thing to thing that we don't feel things.
Well, there's a self-preservation instinct there, isn't there?
Absolutely. Sure. Right. But I teach them not to be afraid of your emotions. And I say, you need to take your mood temperature. It's like mm-hmm. we take a temperature when we have a fever. Just check in. What am I feeling right now? And use some in-depth words. It's not just I'm angry. Maybe I'm hurt or I'm scared. Mm. It's okay to feel it for a few minutes and then move forward. So this checking in, this mood temperature can be very, very helpful mm-hmm. in between sessions.
Okay. They get some practice between sessions. Mm-hmm. And then you can simply say it at the beginning of the session. What's your mood?
Yeah.
1 to 5. Tell me.
How you feeling? And right. And numbers are great. You know, what's the intensity of
exactly.
that emotion?
Right.
So you mentioned that there's a lot of anxiety here mm-hmm. in the city. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's the most challenging emotion that people are up against? Do you think it's anxiety? Do you think it's anger? Do you think it's depression? What do you think is the biggest struggle in general? Obviously, everyone's different.
Yeah, everybody's different.
But in general, what are you seeing right now as people's greatest challenge to overcome?
I see anxiety as a huge complaint in most of my patients.
Okay.
There are people struggling with depression, and I've got a few people that are, you know, anger addicts. But it's the anxiety. It's the worry. Mm. What's going to happen next? And you look at the changes that the world is happening, political changes and what have you. People are scared and they're worried. And the brain hates a vacuum of not having information. And
uncertainty.
Uncertainty, yeah. Absolutely. And we begin thinking, it's a puzzle. If I could think about it a little longer, if I can chew on it and cook it for longer, I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to feel safe. But ultimately, we don't know what's going to happen. And that's okay. And just to live in the moment and to not feed that anxiety, that hunger. I want to chew on this and figure it out. Because you're not helping anything. You're just borrowing from tomorrow.
I like that. Yeah. Borrowing from tomorrow. Someone once told me that getting drunk is stealing a little bit of happiness from tomorrow.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
And I think I really agree with that a lot.
I talk to my clients that our mind can time travel. And when we run off into the future and worry about this and that and whatever, that's where we're going to get anxiety. And when we run off into the past and remember past hurts and tragedies and difficulties, that's where we're going to get depression.
And I see the common theme between the two as things that we can't control.
Yeah.
Because if it happened in the past, it happened. You
absolutely.
Can't control it. You can't change it. You can't modify it. That's what happened. And if you're worried about uncertainties and eventualities, I mean, we can control certain aspects of our life, but the bigger picture, no one controls the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So I think that's a common theme. We were talking in a recent show, Kevin and I were speaking about how so much of emotion is just based in reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so often that reaction, it's a reaction to something that is completely out of our control.
Yeah. Mm. Absolutely.
I like this therapy because it's a reminder that even as I'm walking, my anxiety is dissipating. Whether I'm with somebody or not, I think, you know, after 3 blocks of a walk, you're not anxious anymore.
No.
Even if you're anxious and you're by yourself, you go for a walk, three
right.
blocks, it's pretty much gone.
Well, and that goes back to your body can't time travel. We
uh-huh.
haven't figured that out yet.
Right, right.
So it locks you into your body. You have a movement. The feet are moving, the knees are moving, it's you're looking at your environment, you're in your body. And that fights that depression and anxiety and locks you into today.
Fantastic.
We're big advocates of living in the moment here at The Positive Mind. You are tuned in to WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue. Our guest today, Clay Cockrell, licensed social worker right here in New York City. Clay is a proponent of the walk and talk method of therapy, which we found incredibly interesting. And so we reached out to Clay and asked him if he'd want to come on and talk with us and talk with you. Clay, you may have seen on
CNN
and the New York Times, been featured in the Times, as well as a slew of other media companies and media formats. And we're very happy that you're here, Clay. You've been on Good Morning America. You've been in the Wall Street Journal. And here you are on WBAI, and we're very happy we could make it happen. And I'm just wondering, Have you reached out to other people doing this kind of modality? Are you aware of this going on elsewhere in the country or in mm-hmm. the world? Is this something that people are becoming proponents of?
Well, when I first came up with the idea,
your wife came up with it.
Well, yeah, thank you. But she's going to listen to this
had to do that.
When she came up with the idea and I started putting it together, and I thought, you know, walk, talk, the similar sounding words, and I said, we can't be the first people who've thought of this. So I started looking around.
Okay.
And there's somebody else out there. Maybe I can ask them questions. Is this ethical? And there was nobody.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Nobody at all that was doing this. So because I've been doing it for so long now, therapists now contact me and say, I read about you. I saw you on this.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you teach me how to do this?
Right.
And so now I'm consulting with other therapists to bring this into their practice.
Yeah, fantastic. It strikes me it'd be a great thing with teens.
So, Kevin, we're sitting here with like a renegade. This guy is an inventor.
Nothing but,
well,
you know,
his wife. But
the cutting edge people here on the Positive Mind. Nothing but Ben. Brenda Shoshana, now Clay Cockrell. So, yeah, we keep it going.
You know, one of the populations I thought this is never going to go well with is attention deficit disorder.
I think it would be quite the contrary.
You know, they're going to be looking at the squirrel and the leaf and the
fountain
and not going to be able. And it was the exact opposite because they were finally able to focus.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, it really surprised me. I thought this is not going to work. But my adults that have ADD, they were locked in. They were doing some incredible work, really thinking through some problems and exploring some emotions that in the office, just they're too scattered and they weren't able to lock in and focus.
Yeah, I could see that. And sometimes it's the first time that they're really being tasked to follow another human being, you know, so their mind is jumping all the time. But now we're out on a walk together on a common project together and you know, you're responsible to be responding. And subconsciously, that must do something to their symptom of ADHD.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Has any study been done on that?
Or I don't think so.
You're going to be able to start publishing stuff.
If I have the time.
Yeah. Well, put your wife to work. I'm sure she's working anyway. But this, you guys have a business here.
Yeah.
Because I
yeah.
think it would also very successful if somebody's reluctant to even go outside. You know, if you haven't been out of your house for months or, you know, and you're starting to wonder, how am I going to get back out there? This would be a great transition, I would think.
To go with somebody that does this all day. I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to hold your hand literally, but together we're going to go through this and learn that you're safe and that it's okay. And it helps them to get past that hurdle of getting outside for the first time in months.
Do you go to people's homes?
I don't.
So
I
they don't. They meet you here at Columbus Circle?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got a few people that
except
I meet
the Wall Street guy.
I got a few people that I go down to Battery Park. And I've tried a couple of other parks in the city, and it's just they're too small. And you're just kind of going around in a circle, and they're a little crowded.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Central Park, I've learned its rhythms and how to avoid a lot of the crowds.
Right, yeah. I mean, Prospect Park or Forest Park would work, but those are pretty far from you. So
sure.
Yeah. In any case, we're going to go ahead and take a short musical break. Clay's feet hurt, so we got to take a short break. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to take a short musical break because it's about half past the hour. We'll be back right after this with more from Clay Cockrell. Stay tuned.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing, and you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing, and you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, boots? Start walking.
Nancy Sinatra here on The Positive Mind, WBAI. These boots are made for walking. Pretty sure that's what she's best known for. That's her biggest hit. Yeah. But we're here with Clay Cockrell, who's an innovator with Walk and Talk Therapy. I'm Ben Starr, here with Kevin O'Donohue. And as a reminder, to help us cut down on the frequency and the length of future WBAI fund drives, you can become a WBAI buddy by going to WBAI.org, clicking on Ways to Donate, and then become a BAI buddy in the name of The Positive Mind. Doesn't take much more than a few minutes, and remember, it's always tax deductible. And when you become a WBAI member, you help us eliminate the need for long, drawn-out, frequent fund drives. So please do consider that.
That's $10 a month.
Yeah, it's very simple, so very easy to do.
Need your support.
So Clay Cockrell here is a great proponent and innovator of walk and talk therapy. And beyond just the therapeutic aspect of it, I mean, walking has so many benefits. It's good for you. It's good for your heart. It's good for your lungs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it burns a certain amount of calories. It's good for your mental health, even without the therapy.
Yeah.
Just getting outside and getting some fresh air.
Sure.
Right? I mean, let's say you go on a walk for 30 minutes a day, and you do that every day. That's 1,500 calories a week right there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just a simple act of walking. You can lower your blood pressure walking. So there are definite physical as well as mental health benefits that come along with walking. And in a city where people are always walking anyway, it may be redundant. But I think it's good to point out.
Yeah.
I think it is good to point out.
And it's a win-win. I mean, I think it's like everybody's looking to do two things at once. So here you, you know, eat a lot and lose weight also, you know.
Right.
Go for a walk and get your therapy too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so here is two in one, benefit of two in one.
It's just, I think it's another example of the difference in the lifestyle of someone living an urban lifestyle. It's very hectic. It's very fast-paced. Everyone's trying to multitask all the time, right? And as we said in the first part of the show, we're in this huge city. I mean, we're in the largest city, certainly in the United States. I think Mexico City has more people,
so it might be
the biggest city in North America, but certainly a giant metropolis.
Yeah.
And there's 8 million-plus people, probably more during the work week when people flood in from, you know, the surrounding suburbs. And so yet everyone seems to be struggling, or so many people seem to be struggling with this isolation and loneliness.
Well, you think about it, that we are surrounded by people on the train, in our office, just walking on the sidewalk, right? But we're not connected to them. And so I think there is this dissonance that, you know, what's wrong with me? That I'm around all these people and I'm not connected to them.
Well,
I don't have friends.
We're not connected because there's this like unwritten cultural code.
Right.
Don't make eye contact. Don't approach a stranger.
Absolutely.
We all enforce it on each other in a strange way.
But you've got, because I just had friends come in this weekend, and I don't know about you, when you have family or friends come in, they say, New Yorkers are the friendliest people. I asked for direction and they gave me this whole thing about the directions. And we want to connect with other people. We are friendly, but we've kind of been told, you know, keep your eyes down and don't say anything.
I think that's a myth, that the surly, angry, mean New Yorker.
Right.
Yeah, I really do.
I haven't met him.
No. I just, I don't know where that came from.
The 70s.
Is that?
Yeah. Oh, it was the 70s.
Yeah.
Because back then there were dangerous people
are pretty friendly.
I mean, the crime rate was much, you know, 5 times higher in the 70s than it is now. Yeah. So there, you know, it paid to keep your eyes down, and the subways were riddled with graffiti. I mean, the parts of the city looked shell shocked, and a place to just mind your business and keep going.
Yeah.
And that's changed, you know, and that's a great change. But the isolation and the loneliness hasn't changed. I think it's gotten worse, and we've talked about this with Michael Aaron.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the 1980s, 20% of people said they felt isolated in their lives and lonely. Now it's up to 40%.
Wow.
And, you know, here we have access to crowds when we open our computers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have the world at our fingertips. And yet people feel more than ever isolated and lonely.
Yeah.
Is that a function of technology, or is that more of a function of being in an urban environment, or is it a confluence of the two? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the two. Yeah, I like to think of New Yorkers, we're in our little box, our apartment, and we take the elevator down, and we get in another box, the subway,
right.
And we go into a box or a cubicle at the office, and then we just do the reverse thing coming back. We rarely get outside, you know, in nature. But we also rarely connect with one another. And then you've got this this fantasy world of online dating. And I work with a lot of singles. And the incredible difficulty they have in connecting with a person, because it's just swipe this way and swipe that way and fill out your match profile. But you're not really connecting with people.
I think your therapy is a good way to get ready for the dating scene. Instead of going out on a date, let's go for a walk.
Yes.
That's a great first date.
And walk from place to place. And if you, with Clay Cockrell here, you can get into the habit of walking and talking.
Yeah.
And not superficial talk. So, real talk, not bar talk.
Yeah. Right. You said that your clients are majority male.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of work with singles who are trying to date. So do you talk to a lot of men New Yorkers who are struggling in the dating scene, or is it is that a lot of the women you see talk about that as well?
Both. Absolutely both. Everybody is trying to figure out how to, because it doesn't make any sense. I've got 80,000 people that I got matched with, and I can't find one normal human being to go out with, and we're all hyper sensitive and trying to get the actual perfect person.
Because I think that's another major urban city struggle.
Oh,
finding a person to have a relationship with.
But nobody then goes out to a bar or joins a book club or does a volunteer and actually meet a person and connect with them. And you know, maybe you won't like them and you wasted an hour, but it's an hour of your life. But even more than dating, it's friendship. I think that we form a lot of our friendships in college. And then we come to New York, or you know, we lose contact if you're not from here. And I work with a lot of people who move to New York, and the challenge it is to adjust to this city.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
To have a friendship, especially men, I'm going to go find a guy that likes my sports team and likes the thing that I do, and it's not a sexual thing. It's a friendship.
It's very challenging.
Yes, very challenging. But we hunger for that, I think, as men and women too. I want to have a friendship that I can lean on.
Kevin and I are fortunate in that we grew up here.
Ah.
So I have, you know, the vast majority of people that I'm friends with and in touch with are very long-term contacts.
Mm-hmm.
And it is very hard. I mean, when I think back on the last 5 or 6 years, I've probably only made 2 or 3 new friends.
Yeah.
Everyone else that I'm friends with, they're longtime old friends. So I think that's another great example of a challenge of city life, is that social isolation as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so much is occurring. I really do see this as a really great way to transition to so many different things, and a natural thing. I mean, it's legal. It is legal to take a walk with another person and talk about important things.
Yes. And they want to. Everyone wants to be heard. Everybody wants to be curious about you, and they want you to be curious about them. And to go out and with a friend, a family, and just talk, not do something, not eat, not drink, not be
watch
at a party,
the soccer game,
not watch something, consume some kind of art form like a movie or whatever. We're going to just talk. That's very human.
No screens, right?
No screens. No screens.
So it strike me, like, what do you do on the second session?
Okay.
I'm sure the first session is, like, you know, so rich and so much novelty, mm-hmm. and you're getting all this information. But I could see a client, like, sort of getting stuck and saying, I don't know what I need to talk about. I feel okay. Now that we're walking, I don't mm-hmm. have my stuff. Uh-huh. And I'm kind of lost, so...
Well, I try to remember at the end of the first session to give them a little warning. And this is how the warning goes. It says, have you ever gotten a massage if you're not used to getting a massage? Because what happens is that a few days after the massage, you can have some flu-like symptoms because yes. some toxins have
Absolutely.
Been released. You got to drink a lot of water. See, you take that concept and put it emotionally and mentally. You just told a complete stranger, maybe some secrets, talked about some things you haven't talked about in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be on an emotional roller coaster in the coming days. And sometimes I forget to give the little warning. And
I
they
see.
Come back
yeah,
for the
sure.
second session
right.
and go, oh, my God, this felt awful. Or it felt wonderful. And everybody responds differently.
Right.
So that's the kind of the beginning of the second session.
Okay.
And then, but a lot of people...
They'll report to you how hard it was.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
And a majority of the people say, this felt great. I love this. I was able to get some of this out, to talk about it. I'd never thought that, you know, coming here, I didn't know what to expect, but this was a wonderful experience
mm-hmm.
at the end of the first session.
Mm.
I've given them some homework. So the first thing on the second session is to check in. How did the week go? You know, you had some time to think about what we talked about last time, anything new bubble up.
Mm-hmm.
And then talk to me about the stuff that I asked you to do to get you to be a little uncomfortable and make some changes. And so we start going through that.
I didn't do the homework. I had to say that.
Okay.
You know.
Right.
Because, I mean, a client could come back and say, you know, I got caught up in my guilt again. I mm-hmm. wasted my whole weekend. I was depressed on Friday night. I ordered in all weekend. I stayed by myself.
Yeah.
Yes, I had a great session with you last week, but... You know, I just couldn't get over the hump to get motivated, to even get out of my apartment.
Yeah.
So I didn't do the homework.
Okay. So one of the first things I do is that you beating yourself up
yeah.
is not going to be helpful. Okay. This is a gradual process. We're looking
Beautiful.
For improvement.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Perfection is boring.
Right.
I'm not in the business of perfection. I'm in the business of let's figure out what's getting in the way and begin to tweak it. So let's get the judgment out of the way and figure out what's going to motivate you to make a change and understand that it's going to be uncomfortable. This is going to be hard. I'm not going to sugarcoat this
mm-hmm.
to you. You have done whatever it's complicated your life for the last how many years. You can't fix this in 1 week.
Right.
So it's going to be hard. So you're just going to have to do it.
Perfect follow-up. Perfect follow-up. So I would think that on this walking therapy, a lot of new stuff that clients never thought would come up,
mm-hmm.
come up.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know?
Because you're thinking differently. You're looking at the sky. You're moving your body. You're with somebody that you don't necessarily know, and you begin to think differently, make different connections. I hear all the time, I completely forgot about this thing that happened. You know, how many years ago?
Right.
Or I never really thought about the connection between this thing that happened and how I'm dealing with my wife today. Because you are breathing a little deeper, you're beginning to put a vocabulary and talk about what's going on in your inner world,
mm-hmm.
you begin to make those connections and think about things in a completely different way.
Yeah, yeah. Do you do any office therapy?
Some,
still?
Some.
You do?
Some. I've got a few that tried the walking and they didn't like it.
Uh-huh.
So I've got an office at Columbus Circle, and then when the weather's really bad, like
yeah.
there's ice out, then
right.
then we go to the office. But most of the people are so reluctant to go back into the office once they've experienced, you know, the park.
Yeah, I could understand that.
And it's a different dynamic. It's just a different session.
I believe it, and I believe it probably takes a little bit of the anxiety or the fear off of a therapy session. I mean, whether people are admitting it or not, clients are a little uneasy. In a therapy session,
yes.
and it's about the situation of the therapy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, when do you have somebody's full attention looking right at you? You crave it, you want it, but then
yeah.
when you get it, it's also kind of very tough to handle.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, so I think for people who are sliding towards the paranoia scale, that being outdoors, you know, could open people up and keep people open for the full session, not having to calm that anxiety that they're also feeling alongside whatever issue they're talking about.
Yeah, they quickly begin to stop thinking about me. What I'm if I'm trying to guide them or direct them and manipulate them, they begin to think about them, which is what they should. They shouldn't care about me. Yes. I don't want them to care about me.
Right.
One guy stopped me in the middle of the session going, so how was your weekend? I feel
you
awful
know
that
you're
I'm
a good therapist.
I'm talking about
yes.
myself and I don't know anything. It's like, that's the job.
That's
the job.
Perfect. I love when clients just come in and just start talking right over me. You can walk right over me with your talk if you have to. Yeah. Then we know some. You know, we're beyond the anxiety stage of therapist and client. And it's just now we're dealing with you and what you're going through and what you want to change.
Yeah.
So what about silence?
Silence for me personally is hard. So that's something that I've learned as a therapist, that it is very valuable for you to the power of silence. So sometimes I'll ask a question of a client and she will just, I know she heard me, and but she's being very quiet. So I let that happen. I let, you know, we're just walking. I know that she's chewing on something. But after a while, I have to pull her back out. I'm going, you're having a whole conversation in your head I'm not part of. You need to put some words around this and tell me what you're thinking.
It seems to me more therapeutic outdoors to have a silence than in the office.
Yeah.
More organic, more natural.
There's so many things about this. It's just more natural.
Yes.
I think it's not natural to sit and look somebody in the eye and talk about some of that.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI. I'm Ben Starr here with Kevin O'Donohue, our guest, Clay Cockrell, proponent, innovator, and explainer.
Man about town.
Talking about walk and talk therapy. And this was something that really just kind of tickled our fancy, Kevin and I. We wanted to hear more about it. We wanted you to hear more about it. And we're very glad that you came, Clay. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you, Clay. And I think just to close out, I mean, when we were talking about teens, if you get an adult client who has children and they get used to walking with you and talking intimately, they can take their kid out for a walk. I mean,
yes.
How many parents are doing that? Their parents are taking kids in their car to the soccer game or you know, all sorts of activities, picking them up from school and dropping them off. But they're not taking them for walks, just daddy and one child.
And I hear from parents all the time that they are so frustrated that their kids are addicted to screens, iPad, phone, what have you. This is a chance that we're going to not be distracted and we're just going to walk. And it's almost like we fear that our children are allergic to boredom. But when boredom happens and there's nothing else to do but to talk about your day, what's going on at school, what you're scared about, there's where the connections are.
And you know, and I see a kid turning to his father and says, how was your week? You know, let's get this going. Let's make this a movement, because I really think this is, it's been, you know, it makes sense for this to happen, you know, especially in this city. People are frazzled by their commute. And if you can meet in a middle ground with a therapist, or in the case of Clay, right here at Columbus Circle, but you'll travel for certain clients who just absolutely, you know, can't handle the commute. I mean, just a commute can really frustrate people, but they need help. So, you know.
I always feel, you know, therapy should be convenient. And if it's just an added stress, what's the point? So I wanted it to be a convenient thing for people.
Wow. I want to do it. Let's go for a walk. So the termination process, you know, when you end therapy with a client, that must be unique.
It's a little different, because I try to work myself out of a job. You don't need me anymore. I've given you coping mechanisms, some skills that you can handle life stresses or whatever has been. So I want to see movement, you changing, you turning your life around.
Beautiful.
So at some point, somebody will come for a walk and they're just kind of talking about a movie that they saw or a television. They're really not talking about anything. And I'm going, you know, I appreciate, you know, I like meeting with you.
Yeah.
You know, you're incredibly interesting, but maybe this is a time that you don't need me and you can always come back. But if your life is at a point now to where you're not struggling with something specific, you feel better, you've made some changes, you know, we can end this. And sometimes I'll hear from a client 6 months later or 6 years later, something new's come up, mm-hmm. need to talk it through. So it's not as formal termination with a face-to-face office yeah. visit
right.
Where there's some raw emotion and there's some rejection and there's some it's a difficult process to say goodbye.
Of course it is. Yeah. And I'm wondering if we're letting them off the hook too seriously, because I think this is a serious issue. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things you want to create in a therapy session is a transference, right? You want them to create or make you into somebody that they had from their past.
Yeah.
So they're transferring on to you all of these emotions. Mm-hmm. And if they can terminate so quickly, I'm wondering what that does to the transference. For you, all you listeners out there, this is an old Freudian term, transference. And it's the idea that when you meet with a stranger and you get into an intimate relationship with them, you cast them as a figure from your past. And you become intimate and frequently you make them into your mother or your father.
Right.
And to unwind that in the termination process, mm-hmm. Sounds like, it's a gradual process. So if a client can just sort of say, well, I'm not really coming up with any new material, I guess it's time to end it. Do you take more than one session to process a termination?
Sometimes. It depends. But over a series of months, I've gotten to know them. They've gotten to know me.
Sure.
And so to say, and always remind them that this is a professional relationship. I am here as a resource. And that's one of the complicating factors of walking with a client, because it feels informal. So I'm yes. always reminding them this is a working relationship.
Right.
And it looks like just two people walking through the park, but there are boundaries around this, and I'm not your friend, I'm your therapist.
Sure.
And I'm here to perform a function, and when that function is over, we kind of evaluate what has happened, what has changed, how are you going to be able to move forward.
Right.
And I like to stay in touch, so this is not an ending forever. They always know they can come back.
Yeah, it sounds to me like the perfect vehicle for serial endings, that you could end for one, for let's say even the winter months. I'll see you in the spring.
Yeah.
Do you ever, I would imagine clients would say, I hate the cold, man. I'm not coming. at least we're not walking.
Yeah, we're not walking. They'll go to the office.
But it sounds to me like the perfect therapy to pick up again at different times in yeah. your life.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it's a tremendous resource.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
You said that something that stuck with me, which is you said, I'm not your friend, I'm your therapist.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And yet at the same time earlier, you told us that there are times where, because of the just casual and friendly dynamic of mm-hmm. the work you do, that people will often turn to you and say things like, well, how was your weekend? Or how's your day? Do you find that that's a line that is easily blurred? I mean, I know you're the consummate professional. I know that, you take this work very seriously. But has that ever happened for you?
Has it happened that people have gotten a little confused about the role?
That they start thinking of you as more than like a friend.
That's a good point.
Absolutely.
This is an unusual relationship in the context of everybody else in their life.
Sure.
People come and they talk 100% about themselves. And there is some intimacy that is created there. But it's my job to continually to remind and to monitor that, to do gentle reminders. I'm not going to be your friend on Facebook, and I'm not going to accept little texts, and we're not going to grab coffee afterwards. This is, and I say it does feel weird. I get that it feels weird, but it's okay. This is how it works.
Yeah. It's a great, great point. I love the informality of it. I love the professional of it also, but I'm wondering if you would come in with a client, to hear the client's perspective.
Oh, yeah.
On this kind of therapy. We can do this.
Oh, yeah?
We can do this.
Well, I'll ask a couple.
Clay, it's been great having you here today. We're very pleased and feel fortunate that you were able to take the time to be our guest here on The Positive Mind. If you're just tuning in, you can always find our episodes on WBAI.org in the archives, or check us out on iTunes. The podcast is free, even though it's in the iTunes store. So you just go to the iTunes store, look us up, The Positive Mind, And we're right there for
And
you.
How can they reach Clay?
And Clay, you can get to Clay, send him a message at info@walkandtalk.com.
Yeah, that's all spelled out, A-N-D, right. walkandtalk.com.
So you have been listening to The Great Positive Mind. I'm Ben Starr, Kevin O'Donohue, my colleague here at the Positive Mind Center on West 57th Street. You can reach us by sending us an email, positivemind@wbai.org. We'd love to hear from you, all your feedback. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. And that's about it for today. We're here every Tuesday and Wednesday. Clay, thanks again for being here.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks for having
me. We look forward to seeing you again. Take care. Mm-hmm.